And we're back with the Lakers Fast Break podcast. Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from the Lakers Fast Break, Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, and Game Source. Thanks so much again for joining us. Give a big shout out to our good friends, the Lakerholics, Lakerholics.com, Empire Jeff TV, of course, Daniel Berry Sports Highlights, Lakers in 5, John McCallion, and of course, John Costa. Big shout out to him. Please support his channels as well. Clutch Talk and Lakers Corner. And speaking of supporting, please give us that like, share, and subscribe. Please go ahead and subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live on the air with the latest Lakers Fast Break podcast. The Lakers are in the midst of a couple days off before their big game in Sacramento on Wednesday. But I want to ask a question to Joe. So I actually asked him to come on tonight. Even while I'm still out and about, I still wanted to go ahead and was thinking about this. Anthony Davis. All I see attached to Anthony Davis the past 24 hours is historic performance by Anthony Davis. Historic performance. 27 points, 25 rebounds, 3 block shots, and 7 steals. Absolutely fantastic against the Minnesota Timberwolves, helping the Lakers propel themselves over the Minnesota Timberwolves, 120-109, and keeping them in the mix for a play-in spot, maybe even better than the 10th or the 9th spot where they are currently at right now. But the question I have for Joe, and the question I have for you out there, is for Anthony Davis, is he the key for the Lakers' playoff drive this season? Why is it always that he puts these games together against teams or players that, again, he dominates sets, but when we need him to dominate against a Jokic, a Sabonis, or any other top-flight center, it's always a little bit of a mixed bag, per se. We'll go ahead and discuss that on today's show, plus also as well, again, more info on where the Lakers are at in the Western Conference. Of course, the good man is here. Of course, he is the man behind Simblades, simblades.com. It is Joe Soro. Joe, great to have you back. Again, big victory for the Lakers. And I know you were in the chat earlier on Anthony Davis, but we talk about this all the time, him being that 1A or not so 1A, him not wanting to take the mantle, him wanting to be that 1B, that co-star. But the thing is, when he's dominating like he is, the Lakers are really tough to beat, but he only seems to pick and choose his spots when he's able to do that. Your thoughts on Anthony Davis and what he needs to do to be the main factor for the Lakers in a playoff run?
I don't know. A lot of things have been weird this year. I've said that if AD was going to play all year without an injury, LeBron was going to play all year without an injury, and D'Angelo would play like a third star, as well as Rui and Austin Reeves would play well as well, that they would probably be a little bit better than they are right now.
Yeah.
It's just a very confusing season. Nothing we've really said was out of line, I don't think. It makes sense, wouldn't it? Hey, if AD doesn't miss any time, LeBron doesn't miss any time during the year, and all three of their very good role players contribute, why wouldn't this team be playing well all year? It's just, it's confusing. As far as AD not playing well against the Sabonises, the Jokic's, the Embiid's, the big players, could be just sheer aggression. Maybe he can't inflict that aggression against them. Maybe he's worried about getting hurt against those guys. I'd say that's the only thing that makes sense, which I would like to think that there would be a way where he could use his skills against it, but it just doesn't seem that's the case. And maybe I'll make an excuse for him that when he does play against those big players, maybe the fact that he tries to cover more than his guy in that sequence could cause that result. But That might be just an excuse. That might be something I'm just cooking up in my own head. In certain cases, it's true, but in most cases, I'd like to think that you want to stick with one thing and try and take care of your guy. And if certain players on the perimeter can't take care of, let's say, the De'Aaron Foxes or the Jamal Murrays, well, that's kind of how it has to be. But then again, you can't really stop Jokic. You can't stop Embiid. Doesn't matter how good you are. But what you got to do is you got to go tit for tat. And yeah. Sometimes AD doesn't do the tat. He gets outperformed by the players. You at least have to even it out. When you look at past one-on-one greats, let's use Shaq and Hakeem Olajuwon, or Shaq and David Robinson, Shaq and Patrick Ewing. You look at those meetings, no one stopped Patrick Ewing. No one stopped David Robinson, really. David Robinson couldn't stop Hakeem to the point where it was embarrassing for David Robinson in 95 because that was his MVP year.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. You can't stop great players. What you can do is you can contain them and continue to do what you're doing. But the Lakers and AD have just a different mindset on game-to-game situations. They're not going to bend you to their will. They're not really like that. They are going to try to use their skill set. They're going to try to make shots and finesse their way out of it. That's just what they are. They are a finesse team, no matter how much you want to deny it. If you are denying it, this is a finesse team, and they're going to try to outscore you and play enough defense where there's going to be hopefully some chances at some breakaways or whatever.
But I'm dominant just... performance, dominant performance, and I agree with you on that, Joe. I just was kind of bothered a little bit by it as I was thinking about today as I was driving along the lovely San Diego freeways, and I don't know. Naz Reid on the other end, blowing him up on the other end. Are you bothered by the fact that he just, you know, that was AD's man? And yes, AD, 27 points, 25 rebounds, 3 block shots, 7 steals, et cetera, et cetera. Historic performance, great performance. But again, Naz Reid is blowing up on the other side. Does that bother you at all about his performance against AD?
There's a lot of factors in this. There's a factor of teams playing up against the Lakers, which has been the norm for years. There's coaching deficiencies. There's player mentality. Those all factor in there.
Okay.
But I think it would be, I don't think unfair is the word. I think it wouldn't be prudent to sit there and watch a player score 27 points, 25 rebounds, and have 7 steals with 5 assists and 3 blocks and go, well, what did AD not do tonight? I can't do that regardless of who's playing. You don't get those numbers in the NBA no matter what, unless you're great. And AD had a all-time game yesterday. In terms of any game, regular season or not, and he should be commended. And I don't think we need to be talking about why someone wasn't there or why he couldn't stop certain players in the first quarter or second quarter. I think that tends to dilute the effort and the results.
Well, you can say the same thing for Naz Reid on the other side. He didn't stop AD at all.
And Naz is not going to stop AD. And Naz is not known to be that guy anyways. These teams, let's look at Minnesota as an example, since we're talking about them, is a number one seed. This wasn't some rinky-dink team. This is a number one seed. And it's not just because of Karl Anthony Towns and Rudy Gobert. They have a good team. They have really good role players, really good backups, and they have fairly good coaching. You know, Finch is a good coach. He can control the tempo and control the game in a lot with his coaching.
And Naz Reid is a back, is a excellent, probably the best backup center in the league.
I would say 100%. He is like the backup quarterback that would spell a starting quarterback for two or three games during the year on a Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
He is by far the best. He is the best big man backup in the NBA, bar none. There is no argument there, in my book anyways. And he's got a fairly good contract for that backup position, which would,
I know people were crying about it initially, but obviously we've seen the good results from it.
Who was crying?
A lot of people were crying because it was such a large amount for a guy that is considered a backup center. But like you said, he could be starting for maybe 10, 15 teams in the league.
He'd be starting for LA right now. He could start where AD would shift down to the four. I don't know who would complain about that. I don't think 12 to 13 million is a lot of money for a viable 7-8 man rotation guy. 7 to 8 rotation guys that are consistent are why Minnesota are in as the one seed. That's why they've been there for a while there, give and take here and there. Obviously, there. I don't think they're going to end up there, especially now that Carl Anthony Towns has been injured for the rest of the regular season.
And they've been struggling in March, so they're actually dropped off.
It's a battle of attrition. It's a battle of attrition, yeah. And that's going to be my last point on Anthony Davis. You want Anthony Davis to play all year, folks? I think Anthony Davis is trying to do that. Anthony Davis isn't going to bump and grind. It's just he's not. He's not going to Bobby Brown it. Is that right? Bump and grind?
Something like that.
I might have butchered that. No, I'm sorry. That was R. Kelly. That's even worse, by the way. Wow.
For all together different reasons, but well, yes, yeah. I did.
No, we cannot make a lily a rose. I'm going to go a little soft here. We can't do that. Let's be thankful, because as of right now, if Anthony Davis remains in his healthy state, he will have played 78 games. He's played 62. There's 16 games left. He will have played 78 games and did exactly what we asked him to do at the beginning of the year. I'm not going to sit here and harp on stuff every now and then where we're not happy. Now, I am going to call him on a little bit of a manhood check here, because it's what you do. Hey, you got a guy that's 9-0 against you. At some point, top 75 player in his prime needs to start going, you know what? I'm not going to let this keep happening. That's how I'd like to gas him up for Wednesday. Hey, it's time, AD. It's 9 games. I think number 10 needs to be yours. You need to go into Golden 1 and you need to take Sabonis out. You need to make that guy work. But then it could be just simple size advantage. Maybe he can't. It's not a coincidence that guys like Sabonis, who are extremely strong below the waist.
Yeah.
Someone like Embiid, who's extremely strong below the waist, on top of the waist, on his head. And then, of course, then you got the MVP in Jokic. Well, Embiid's the MVP right now, but you know what I mean. Past 2-time MVP. These guys are like oak trees that have been around for 100 years. They are hard to play against because they're just simply big. And AD is not that guy. AD is more of a finesse type player, regardless of how wide his shoulders are or whatever.
And he did.
Yeah.
Oh, I was saying, and he did play on that shoulder, you know, obviously being very sore by what happened when Giannis ran into him on Friday.
Yeah, Giannis, I think it was the point. Was it the point of his elbow that hit him there?
It had to have been, because it was so fast, okay. Man. So even on the replay, you could barely see
I've had that happen to me, folks. It doesn't go away right away. And when I heard it wasn't structural, I believe it was like afternoon time,
Yeah.
Before the game started yesterday.
Yes.
I said, oh, I know what happened. Because I didn't know. For all I knew, he got a dislocation, a supplication, whatever it is that might have happened. I've had shoulder surgery before on a torn labrum that I had for 10 years. And that was more wear and tear on me. It wasn't anything deliberate. I did have a few stingers. It was my weapon when I did play. It was my weapon. And it got more and more injured as I started lifting more weights. Typically, usually the incline dumbbell type or barbell type weights, over time you start to aggravate it even more.
Kurt Affair is asking if it's like a stinger.
It's not a stinger. It's almost like, okay, I want you to take your hand and put it in between your shoulder and your the top part of your chest. You feel that right there? If you've ever gotten an elbow right there or anything, it hurts. It's like a Charlie horse that doesn't go away. Charlie horse is like getting kicked in the thigh. It's the shoulder injury that I don't talk about this instance a lot, although I should. When Ray Allen in game two in the 2010 finals went off, he hit 8 three-pointers against the Lakers. He basically helped the Celtics win game two. Otherwise, Lakers would have taken game two. There was a screen. I think it might have been in the second half or in the second quarter. I can't remember when it was, but because Ray Allen was going off in the first quarter. He wasn't missing in the first quarter at all. Like, first half, he owned it. Until Ron Artest kneed him in the leg, and he was never right after that. Couldn't get lift the rest of the series. Because the question has always been, well, what happened to Ray Allen in that series after game two? What happened was Ron Artest's knee jacked him up the rest of the way. Couldn't get any lift on his shot, so he wasn't as consistent. So imagine that now on the shoulder. It's the same situation where you can't.
Weston was asking, is it in the meaty area?
I think it was right here. I can't tell you for sure, but it's right here. It's just below the collarbone. If you touch right here where the collarbone is, if you ever get hit there, I mean, right now, I'm just barely doing this and it hurts. So imagine now Giannis and his freaking arms and his body just hitting you right there. It's almost like it hits a nerve and your body's like, it made sense why he was like this, because he couldn't move it. His muscles jacked up.
It was limp, throughout the entire rest of that second half on Friday
night. I'm
not
a doctor, okay? I know everybody's different. I have fell hard on concrete, asphalt, gotten up, and been fine. I watched Ray Lewis play middle linebacker for 20 years and hit people with every ounce of ferociousness on the planet. And yet I look at him and I'm like, how is this guy walking? Some people are just made different. Some people can recover quicker. Some people can handle the pain. It's a lot of factors in this. Now, what Anthony Davis has likely done this year with his injuries is he's played through them. Why? Because he heard the noise and he knows his team needs him. So he's tapped into that mental part of his game saying, I'm going to play through this. And it's happening. If he doesn't have any injuries for the remaining 16 games, he is likely to play at least, let's say he misses a couple games for whatever reason. He's going to probably play at least 76 games this year.
He'll still be in the top 10 in minutes played. That'll tell you something right there. Just amazing.
Anthony Davis did what he was supposed to do. LeBron hasn't had a major injury. We know that his foot is hurting him. We know his ankle's hurting him. We get it. But that's part of the wear and tear of a career. Not so much, you know, not misdiagnosing something or playing through something. That's just wear and tear that he's managing.
Let me ask you this then. Let me get into this. Because AD and LeBron, I mean, we've seen the team without LeBron. We've seen the team without AD. We've seen the team without LeBron and AD at various levels of success over the course of this season. Which one of the superstars that we have is a bigger key to making the playoffs? Because obviously people point to LeBron because he's LeBron, but Anthony Davis, when he gets those kind of numbers, when you see him dominate on one side of the ball like he did yesterday, in fact, both sides, in fact, you know, 27 points, 25 rebounds, he got the offensive rebounds that we needed, that we, for a team that really does a bad job of offensive rebounding. Is he a bigger key to the Lakers' success this season than LeBron?
There has never been, since the LeBron AD era started, there's never been one that's more important than the other. It's okay. Exactly like Kobe and Shaq. Now, you can sit there and tell me all you want that Shaq was the main cog during the three-peat. You can tell me that all day with no evidence. I watched those games. I watched all those games except for maybe a handful, because I couldn't, because at that time the KCAL TV station wasn't available for road games in San Diego. I'd usually have to go to Seau's, God rest his soul, and his restaurant to watch those road games. It wasn't as easy like it is now, right? Look, here's what happened during the Shaq-Kobe time, especially in the playoffs. Shaq would get two fouls within the first 6 minutes almost every road game. Who do you think carried the team after that? Who do you think owned the Spurs in two of those series? Spurs were deathly afraid of Kobe Bryant more than Shaq, which made sense because they had guys that can somewhat contain Shaq. They didn't hold him down, but they could contain him. Why? Well, they had Duncan, who was a very, very good, one of the all-time great defensive players. The first few series, they had David Robinson. So, you know, it made sense that you had no shot. Well, he drew a lot of the issue. You know, he drew a lot of the players to Shaq. Yeah, well, it's a team game, guys. I think we forget that, too. It's a team game. Derek Fisher had a hand in it. Robert Horry had a hand in it. Rick Fox had a hand in it. Horace Grant in 2001 was the perfect. When you want to know why the Lakers were so dominant that last quarter of the season, it's because of a lot of it was because Horace Grant was the perfect player at the perfect time, playing at his perfect ability at that time. He had no shot. If you don't believe me, watch game two against Portland that year, the first round. He went off. He like scored in like seven consecutive series. He was going nuts. It was one of the great, and I love Horace Grant. I'm a huge Horace Grant fan, always have been, just because I think his honesty has always been something I admire. Scottie Pippen, too, until he kind of went nuts lately. But going forward now, this is an equal importance between AD and LeBron. It's equal importance. It was equal in 2020. It's equal now. There is no difference. One goes out, they're toast when it matters. What intangible they need, should they get lucky here, is if Gabe Vincent comes back. I don't know how he can come back after missing a whole season and be effective. I just don't see it. I'm sorry. I've never seen it. Won't see it. Just not enough stamina.
Plus, Dinwiddie's there now, so taking and up
Dinwiddie
his missing minutes.
Done. Dinwiddie is on the last part of his career. I'm not going to sit here and criticize a man that's done. Dinwiddie is done, folks. He's going to do a little here and there, but you can't expect him to be a difference maker, unfortunately. However,
I mean, when he made that block the other night, that was really only thing he did the entire game. That was a positive.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can make a play like that once. We're talking about, we need consistent game in and game out.
No, that's what I'm saying, is that he struggled the entire game because, you know, you're getting a buyout guy, no matter what his name is. He's a guy that's probably on the other end of his career.
Yeah. No, yeah. The depth right now is the issue for the Lakers. They've greatly improved on offense. They have enough offensive firepower to win a championship, but they don't have the defense or the depth. The only way they would have any shot at doing anything is if they got into the playoffs and played the best matchup teams, which would be in Oklahoma City and Minnesota, because I'm feeling a little itch for Carl Anthony Towns that he's not going to probably be available in the first round. He might be available in the second. I don't know if he'll be available in the first.
Yeah.
So that could be your chance. If they end up dropping and you happen to get a seven seed and they're a two seed, you could see something there with the Lakers against Minnesota. But you're also asking LeBron and AD after a long season with a bunch of guys that really can't play defense to play another, 3 months of even more intense basketball? It's just a really, really, really hard season. A lot of the reasons why the Celtics run out of gas towards the end is because they've been in the Eastern Conference Finals practically, and they made a finals appearances for the last 4 years. It's easy to play and win those first 3-4 months, but what happens when you start getting into March and April? Now things start to catch up to you, and then you got to play another 3 months to win a championship. It is ridiculously hard on the body.
So could the key for this Lakers team going forward, since the tide has turned and we started the season complaining about how bad the Lakers were shooting-wise from beyond the arc. Now, mind you, they don't take that many more threes than what they did the first part of the season, Joe, but they're much more accurate at it. In fact, they're now, I believe, right around the top 10 in the league in three-point efficiency. So could our backcourt or our three-point shooting be the actual key for the Lakers making a playoff run?
I'm not worried about their offense.
Okay.
I'm not worried about their offense. I was really never worried about their offense in general, even when they weren't hitting threes. I'm worried about their overall team defense and schemes. Will Darvin Ham be a better coach in the playoffs in this last, end of the run? Will he get out coached? Do the Lakers have enough talent in terms of the deep part, the 6, 7, and 8? It's too many questions to answer. There has to be something that materializes that we're not expecting. I am now going to fully go into that mode. The mode of, I really don't know what's going to happen. Why? Because nothing has made sense from what we said would happen. Nothing has made sense. How is it that both LeBron and AD have not been majorly injured this year? You have Austin. Granted, he started out slow, but he's playing really well the last 3 months. D'Angelo being one of the best three-point shooters since January 1. You have Rui, who's just ascended from where he was. He was a nobody in Washington and has become a 12 to 15 point scorer and seems to be getting better. There's improvement there. You can see it. He's cerebral. He knows his role. He can shoot. He can play some defense here and there. He can get to the basket. This is a great, great asset to have for someone who's making $18 million a year and playing around these guys. But what will it mean in the end? I seriously don't know. I don't know, because I really thought if they were going to play like this, they would be sitting more at 46 and 20 if these guys were available the way they were. But they weren't. Well, Joe, Vanderbilt's been out. Gabe Vincent hasn't given us anything. JHS was a bad draft pick. Yeah, that factors into that, likely. Sure. But I don't think they should have lost some of those games, no matter who was injured. I think they lost too many bad games.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was because you didn't know what you were doing.
Yeah.
It's just you can't afford to do it. You just can't afford to do it. Not now. You needed good positioning. You needed to get out of this. You needed to have the mentality, we're not going to be in the play-in this year. We got to at least get into the top four. If not, at least get a fifth or sixth seed where you can guarantee yourself not having to worry about a play-in game. Right now, it's very likely they're going to have to win two games in the play-in. That's what the stats say after 66 games. Will it change for 16 more? Why would it? Today, Every team that we needed to lose won today. And that's my point. My point is, sure, the Lakers could win the games they should win, and they'll have a couple of losses here, but they'll, let's say, go 7-10, 7 out of 10 for the next 10 games or whatever. But the other guys are going to go, what, 6 out of 10? Now you just made up one game when you're down 3 in the loss column. It doesn't – it's very difficult, especially in the West. You're talking about – someone said something on the radio today that made a lot of sense. I didn't even think about this. It was on NBA TV on Sirius Radio. I think it was Frank Isola, one of my favorites on NBA, on the NBA channel.
Good. I'll second that.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Matter of fact, I want to do a show with him one day. I admire his work. He said, if you look at the top 10, he goes, you could argue that every one of those teams could win a first round series. And you could. What if Golden State has a 10th seed, they win 2 games, they get into the playoffs, and they face Oklahoma City? Let's say they just get past Denver by 1 game to get to the first seed, right? Now you have the 1-8, and then what if Steph goes into 2022 Steph mode, and he could win the series on his own? You're talking about a young team that doesn't have a lot of experience, has a lot of talent, but in this particular sport, you got the experience holds a lot of water.
He did it last year against the Kings.
Very rarely do you see a young team go and win. The closest that any really young team got to winning a championship was the 2012, ironically, Oklahoma City Thunder. That team was, I think, what was it, the second youngest team in the NBA at the time? I can't remember what it was exactly, but it's just rare. So we have to factor that in too. This is the West, and we got to be realistic on both sides of this argument. You know, there's a lot of arguments for LeBron, and he's made the finals so many times. And congratulations to LeBron for going to the finals 8 years in a row. But you guys, the fact that he's gotten older too in the meantime, and the fact that he's in the West, folks, I want everyone to hear this, especially those who don't like LeBron. LeBron doesn't go to 8 straight finals in the West between 11 and 18. I want you to really understand what that means. The Eastern Conference is trash, and it was trash even more between, I would say, 07 and 18. It was just even worse than it was at the beginning of the 2000s.
Well, look at it this way, Joe. Let's say you put Frank's team, Dallas, you saw them dominate today against the Bulls. Both their big guys, Gafford and Lively, dominating 20 points, 10 rebounds, each of them. And then, by the way, add in a triple-double for Luka. What would happen? Where would you put a team like Dallas, which is the 8th seed just above the Lakers? Where would you put them in the Eastern Conference if they were right there? You put that roster on an Eastern Conference team. Where would you put it?
You could probably honestly say this and say that they'd probably be a 2 seed.
I would agree. I think they're better than Cleveland.
You put Luka in the East? Luka might be the MVP right now.
I think they're better than Cleveland.
That's the difference. And Cleveland is a scrappy young team. It's got a star on it. Good coaching. They're coming up. They're probably they're one superstar away from probably being a threat in the East.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's the East, folks. I really was excited for the East last year. I thought they were going to make a run. I really thought Milwaukee, I'm like, all right, Milwaukee, they're going to be a 1 seed. You got Embiid, who just won the MVP. He's probably going to be motivated to do some things here. Obviously, the Celtics were good. And then what happened? We saw what happened. A freaking play-in 8 seed made it to the finals and then got their asses kicked because they ran out of gas again. Can't keep playing like that uphill, especially when you start meeting a team that's been that can whoop your ass because they have the talent, they have the size, and they have the depth to do that.
Yeah. And we're not trying to be demeaning to the Eastern Conference. It's just, if you were to put Golden State as a 10th seed right now, you put that roster on an Eastern Conference squad, let's say Orlando, or let's say Cleveland, or let's say New York, where do you see them? I see them as a second or third seed as well. I just see the Western Conference, just like Frank Isola said, 1 through 10, just so many of these teams can go ahead and make some difference in the playoffs. I mean, we even always overlook teams like Sacramento, who are playing on Wednesday, and also New Orleans, who are just like flying so far under the radar. Yet look at them. Look how well they're playing. And if they get a big series from Zion, they can go a couple rounds in the playoffs easy.
Yes, and I'm going to answer. I have to answer Jay's question soon here.
Yes.
I'm going to answer Sports Babies first.
Of course.
That's just kind of a part of the subject. Sports Baby, the same way I'll say that he only made it to the finals in those years because of the weakness of the East, I also have something else to say that goes in favor of LeBron here as well. LeBron, I never faulted LeBron for leaving Cleveland. I never really understood what the big deal of that was. Oh, you're going to go play with stars. And I'll tell you what was hilarious is I would hear, well, he went to go play with stars, yet I would also hear the same, well, Chris Bosh isn't that guy. Well, which one is it? Is he a star or is he not? Did he go play with Dwayne Wade and all of a sudden he's chasing rings? Okay, let's talk about the culture of the NBA in the 80s. You had 26 teams in the 80s. That's a big number. Now it's 30. Yeah, it might not sound like a lot, but there was 26 teams. We're talking about 60 less players in the NBA. You know how small that window is in the NBA, the teams? You're talking about 5 players playing at the same time. That's 60 players that are now dispersed to those remaining 26 teams. You look at the Celtics. They had 4 Hall of Famers, 5 if you count Bill Walton, who was a sixth man of the year in 1986. The Lakers, they had Bob McAdoo. They had Jamal Wilkes. They had what could be another Hall of Famer, Michael Cooper. Then they had Kareem. They had Magic. They had Worthy. They had stacks and stacks of players. And then even the teams in Dallas, even the teams in Denver, Alex English, Rolando Blackman. You got star players in those secondary teams. You had Karl Malone. John Stockton taking the Lakers to 7 games in 88. You had amazing talent, and each team was stacked. They had Mark Eaton, Defensive Player of the Year, I think twice on those Utah Jazz teams. They were stacked all around. So, of course, those guys aren't going to go anywhere. Of course they're not going to change teams. Fast forward to the 90s, okay? Let's look at Jordan's team. Jordan gets drafted, changes the entire dynamic of Chicago basketball. The Chicago Bulls were 5th in ticket sales. Might have been 6th. It was behind the Bears, the Cubs, the Blackhawks, the White Sox, and the soccer team. They had a soccer team, indoor soccer team, that sold more tickets than the Bulls. They were 6th in ticket sales in Chicago. Jordan gets there. Within 2 months, they're selling out left and right. Then what happens? Then Jerry Krause drafts, well, he didn't draft Scottie Pippen. He traded for him for Olden Polonese. That's it. You know the history after that. He got Horace Grant. He got Bill Cartwright in a trade for Charles Oakley and built that championship team, right? And that's what you saw. You saw him with the Knicks. You saw him against the Cleveland Cavaliers, against Utah later, against the Seattle Supersonics. Fast forward to the Lakers three-peat. Fast forward to the Spurs team. What happened there? Well, none of that stuff occurred later when LeBron was going into his prime. And no one is going to Cleveland. You don't think he asked Chris Bosh to come to Cleveland? Matter of fact, he did. Chris Bosh was a free agent. This is his boy. He's like, bro, we need you. Can you come to Cleveland? Chris Bosh goes, No effing way I'm going to Miami. What choice did he have? Is he going to stay there and turn into Kevin Garnett? Or is he going to control his destiny? Now, I'm veering off our subject a little bit, but it's important because the questions are being asked.
Of course.
Comments are being made. For those of you who think I'm hard on LeBron, I'm hard on, I am direct with LeBron as much as I am in support of LeBron. Folks, we're not perfect, okay? We make mistakes. You do certain things that aren't good, and you do things that are bad. You point out both. That's called fair game. It's called evening things out. It's called normal discussions, okay?
Joe, I read the comments. I read the comments. You've been called a LeBron stan and a LeBron hater within the same week.
And I got called a liberal and a Trump supporter in the same day as well, by the way, which yes. is hilarious. It happened in one day. One of my other friends said, you're a lib, and then I had my other Yahoo friends, you're a Trump supporter. I'm like, Trump supporter where? Where does this come from? Like, what do you guys think I'm doing in my house? Like, I got flags and hats of some guy? Like, really? My walls are empty, okay? My walls are empty. I support me and my family, okay? Relax. So
no, Simblades. Simblades with the Y.com.
Well, Simblades supports me. That's how that works. But Jay had a question about Shaq and Kobe against the 08 Celtics. Oh, boy.
Oh, that, my God.
Are we talking about the 04 Kobe and Shaq or the three-peat Kobe and Shaq?
Three-peat Kobe and Shaq you got to give it to them every time.
I equate the 04 Lakers as the Mike Tyson against James Buster Douglas fight. Until that fight, you looked at Mike Tyson as the most invincible man on the planet. Boxing doesn't get enough credit that it's number one in all fighting styles. A lot of people will argue against it, but I don't think I've ever heard even the most staunch mixed martial art guys that I've talked to, they never say anything negative about boxing, the sweet science. So you can honestly say that Mike Tyson, before James Buster Douglas, was the baddest man that ever fought. You could have an argument there, even though you can go back to Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, whatever. So that 04 team was the Lakers as Mike Tyson playing James Buster Douglas, which were the Detroit Pistons. Because they lost that series, it made them human. And it's always there. It's always there. It would have been different if they had lost, let's say they win in 04, Shaq stays, they win in 06, let's say, then they win in 07, whatever. Let's say they win 5 to 6 championships. And then they lose to Miami or whomever, Dallas in 2011. That's more of the passing of the torch, kind of like how the Lakers lost to the Pistons in 89, right? Kind of like how that worked, how the Bulls beat the Pistons in 91 before they went to the finals. That's a normal transition. But 04, you had Shaq still on in his prime and Kobe just got in his prime, and they lost. And that always puts a damper in the greatest of all time discussions, not only for Kobe, obviously, but for Shaq, because you've heard me say this over and over again, and I'll always bring it up because I think it's an important statistic to understand and observation. How different does Shaq's career look in terms of all-time greats and his position if he wins in 95 and in 04? I will tell you right now, without a hesitation, if Shaq wins in 95, where he was favorite, and in 04, where he was favorite, Shaquille O'Neal would have been the greatest center that ever played in the NBA. The list would have Shaq at number one, above Kareem, above Wilt, above Russell, Mikan, doesn't matter who it was. So the results matter. Why is Jordan known as the greatest? Not only because I think he's the greatest basketball player I've ever seen, just from skill. He also has the results, and the results didn't have a blemish. 6-0, six finals MVPs. Shaq would have been close. Shaq would have been 6-0 with five finals MVPs.
Once again, it is the Lakers Fast Break. It is Joe Sorrell along with me, Gerald Gossard. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. Truly appreciate it. 805 says he was just watching one of our competitors, Locked On Lakers, and they're talking about Vando coming back and hopefully starting. He doesn't get why everyone loves Vanderbilt so much. He's a paint clogger. I will just say this, 805, the last week he played before he got hurt, because he was so bad those first couple weeks, but the last week to 2 weeks, he finally understood where he was, or let's say the coaches finally understood a way to utilize him properly on both ends of the floor. Joe, having him back, obviously he's going to be a benefit to us, but I don't see him, or I don't think that they should start him upon his return to the team like they did in the playoffs, because he, you know, I think he should be situational, because Rui has played so well and absolutely deserved his starting spot, and obviously shown what a mistake Ham made by not starting him sooner. I know he had his injuries early in the season, but once he was healthy, you were still having him come off the bench. So I think that right now, statistically, we're 9-3 with those guys out there with that starting lineup. I don't think you should mess with a good thing while it's doing so well, Joe.
I'm going to finish off this question for Jay. He just asked me another question. Jay, I'm going to assume, and then I'll get back to that. Remind me what the question is again.
Of course.
Jay, Shaq, are you talking Shaq in 08 playing with the Celtics?
Because by that time, it was already downhill, Jay.
He wasn't bad in 08. He just wasn't old Shaq. And if it, the thing is, you don't have Lamar Odom. You don't have Pau Gasol. If you put Shaq in there as the center in 08 with Pau and Lamar, yeah. I still say that if Bynum had been healthy that year, they would have beat the Celtics. So, yeah, it just depends on the scenario. He was still good in 08. Still somewhat good. Back to what you're saying about Vanderbilt and what was going on. Look, you cannot expect someone that misses half a season, who's limited in so many areas, especially in skilled areas, and expect him to be that big of a difference maker. You can't do that.
I think he should be situational. I think really should be situational for him. If you're having issues, so that you can play him man to man, but he does, like you say, have his deficiencies. And again, Rui has been the better player. He's been that better number five in that starting lineup than any other option the Lakers have had this season.
I'm trying to think what team they would use Vando for versus not using Rui.
Well, I mean, starting off with a play-in.
I would say Golden State. They could, against Denver, you have a better shot of containing Porter Jr. with Vando at full tilt.
But didn't they have Vando in the starting lineup in the Western Conference Finals, as you saw how that went?
Right. But that would be a better opportunity to contain him. Whether he does it or not is unknown. I don't know what his benefit's going to be when he gets back. I don't know. He's missed way too much time. Gabe Vincent has missed 62 games. I don't know how these guys are going to matter this late in the season. Their stamina is going to be off. Then you're asking them to go play in pressure games, and not only. You're not even getting to the playoffs at the beginning here with their situation now. You're going to have to play in a play-in where it's even a bigger precious even more right now, because if you lose one game, it's a single elimination game, no matter where they are between 7 and 10. In a lot of ways. Now what? What are you going to do? It's a lot of pressure. So you want to go with your best players at this point. I don't know if there's a benefit. Lakers might have to just outscore teams. They might have to outscore them. But that doesn't work in the playoffs. Game slows down. And then you have Jokic distributing. That's a deadly combination. There is no team in the NBA that distributes in the half court better than Denver because of Jokic.
Because right now, if the season ended today, and whoever's in seventh would be facing the Nuggets. The Nuggets have moved up to second in the.
And I believe they'll be number one when it's all said and done. Which is imperative that the Lakers get to the seven, at the very least. If they don't get to the seven, that means they'll be the eight if they were to get through the play-in. They play Denver in the first round. They're done in five games.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. And it might be five games even if they got back to the Western Conference Finals and met Denver. But you want to prolong that situation a little bit more. Maybe somebody gets hurt. It evens it out a little bit. You never know. It happens. But then, you know, you're battling the fact that Denver might be the only team that could for sure beat Boston in the finals. If Boston meets anyone in the West and they're healthy in the finals, let's say, that could be scary. That could be scary.
Bloodhound, I just want to go ahead and mention, I will check to see, because you mentioned earlier in the chat about Kobe's statue having, I guess, spelling or grammatical errors. Hopefully, I will get the opportunity on Wednesday to go ahead and check it out, because I'll be in that area specifically to go ahead.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was reading that today. I am embarrassed. That's
disgraceful.
How do you – who is doing this? Who is the quality control person on this?
How does that have
spellings? And 90% of the people that have seen the statue are not happy with the statue. It doesn't look like Kobe.
I know Darren wasn't in the chat. Darren wasn't happy with it from the start.
He's not the only one.
Yeah.
Is that a mask to fix up the statue because they've been getting stuff for it?
Remember, he's going to have three of them, Joe.
By the way, speaking of Gilbert Arenas, if you guys want to see a gem of a clip, Kwame Brown. If you guys haven't seen it, watch it. Put in Kwame Brown and Gilbert Arenas. Lambasted Gilbert Arenas in his face. Well, virtually in his face. And it was pretty brutal. He had Gilbert Arenas trying to fumble his words. It was that deep. He was just laying it into him. Yeah, it was pretty crazy how lethal Kwame was in that.
Well, Gilbert Arenas is already in a lot of trouble after what he said about the European players last week. So it's in a lot of hot water because of that. But
what hot water? Nothing's going to happen to him. Look what Kendrick Perkins said, some stupid stuff last year about Jokic being an MVP because of the – you know why. And what happened to him? They gave him a raise? Sure.
Good point.
Yeah. There's a – now I'm not going after – I'm not one of those guys that wants to fire everybody. For God's sakes, you know, give it a rest. But I see so many times someone say one thing and then they do the exact thing that they're criticizing. But because they're in a certain position, it's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not. You're being the same dickhole that you – we're complaining about before. Why is it okay for you to do it? So yeah, European players you want to criticize European players in the 90s? That's one thing. Maybe even in the 2000s to some degree. Criticizing them now, really? Jokic, Luka, Sabonis. Is that really, are those guys really European though? Is the Slovenia, is that considered Europe? That's the Eastern Bloc, isn't it? Croatia, Slovenia, that's not really Europe, is it? It's more like Eurasia, right?
I mean, what was David Stern?
Are you telling me that Wembanyama, he's European, right? He's from France. Okay. Yeah. You're telling me that's this freaking guy? You're criticizing European players when this guy is alive and doing what he's doing? Matter of fact, he's the defensive player of the year in my book, if it's not AD or Gobert. Why couldn't he win it? He is more intimidating than any of those two in my book. I would be more intimidated by him.
David Stern's plan was to make sure he marketed the game to the entire world. And to the, so the entire world has started to catch up. It was inevitable, Joe. I mean, it was inevitable for these players all around the world to finally start to catch up. And now we have a game that's a little bit more even playing field or playing court, as it were, than what we've ever seen before. We'll see what happens when it comes to Paris here in the summer. But you know what? There's a lot of great players. Luka, we talked about, you know, Frank's team, the Dallas Mavericks. Talk about Nikola Jokic. I mean, my gosh, so many great players from all around the world. They're here playing the NBA. That's what they wanted. They wanted the best of the best, and that's what they've got.
Well, we talk about globalization in America a lot as a negative. And there's a lot of truth to that. But the inevitable might in the next 200, 300 years, let's say, is because of the internet, because of our connection now to the world and everything being like this, I think we're being a little unrealistic that we're not going to be a one world entity at some point. Whether that's good or bad is somebody else's opinion. I'm not gonna be around for that one way or the other. We're not gonna be a part of that. Obviously won't be here for that, but I think inevitably that's what's going to happen. And if you're looking at it from future, the likely future of sports, especially the NBA, and if you want it to be a world game, there could be a chance where there'll be a European league, like kind of like how baseball was a National League, American League. So you'll have the America League, like right now, the NBA, then you'll have one in Europe. Maybe you'll have one in Australia. Maybe you'll have one in China. I don't know how that would work. Let's say Asia, Africa, Europe, like have their own leagues. I'm sorry. Yeah, they have their own leagues, NBA leagues, and then those four continents end up meeting for the world title in a world tournament. That could be something in 100 to 200 years. Maybe.
Make sure you preface that. Yeah, like that's something for way
it's,
down.
It's the way down where we're not going to be here. Maybe if the Scientologists are correct, we just switch pods when we pass away, which I still found pretty fascinating. I had a friend of mine. It was the gentleman that I owned the dispensary with for 4 months. He was a Scientologist. And of course, Scientology has this negative stigma. A lot of it is warranted. But I had a chance to sit down with him and talk to him. He wasn't preachy about it. He wasn't pushing it on me in any way. But he did say a couple things that made me, that one I still use to this day in terms of what he was taught. And the other one was an interesting topic. The first one was, Joe, match the level of whomever you're talking to. So if you're talking to someone, and I know this isn't a Scientologist thing, this is before, but that's what they emphasized. That was the first time I ever heard about it. Match the tone of who you're talking to, because communication gets much more clear for them. So if you're talking to someone who's monotone, speak in monotone voice. If someone's erratic, be erratic. That's how the communication connects at its highest point. The second one was life and death. Well, what's the belief of, because anytime I hear about some religion, well, what's their afterlife philosophy? Well, they believe that we switch pods. They use the word pods. So you die and then you switch to another body. And I got to admit, I was pretty intrigued by that. I was like, eh. You know, Hindus say that you get reincarnated into a wolf or a flower or whatever. This one is you just go back into another body. I was like, you know what? That'd be actually kind of cool if that's how it worked. You never died. You just don't remember. But anyways, I think basketball is a much easier sport, like soccer, to be a world game. Football is a little difficult, especially for the countries out there, which the majority are not very affluent with money. You know, they're not going to be able to get pads. Hockey, same situation in a lot of ways. Not going to be able to afford pads and skates and cleats and all that stuff. Basketball, all you can create a basket, a literal basket anywhere and throw it in there. Soccer, hell, my dad used to say when he was playing soccer, they didn't wear shoes. You could wrap tape in a ball and play soccer. So basketball can definitely be the world game if it wants to be in the next 100 to 200 years.
Once again, it is the Lakers Fast Break. It is Joe Soro along with me, Gerald Glassford. Thanks again so much for being part of what we do here. The chat, the best Lakers chat room that's out there is the Lakers Fast Break. Bloodhound says, who knows if basketball will be around in 200 years? That's a good point as well. We'll see what happens. Let's hope it is. Let's hope the game will endure and outlast us all as far as being something that people will enjoy for many years to come. Speaking of basketball, Joe, before we head on out, I know you didn't answer this, but I did put it out there because it was already suggested by Dante that we put out a tournament challenge bracket for March Madness. So I know they haven't picked the brackets yet. They will do that on Sunday night. But thinking about it, my friend, and a lot of people have already told me on the email that they would be in on it. So I think we might need to throw in a LFB prize in there as far as for the winner. No? Yes? Maybe?
Sure.
Okay. How's your March Madness picks, man?
I haven't played that in a long time.
It's smart man.
It's not. It's. I. When I did play, I just would pick the first seeds to go to the Final Four.
You would go chalk.
Yeah. Last year was so fun, though. I didn't do a tournament check, but San Diego State was so close to winning. But as soon as UConn started coming up, I'm like, can Miami take them out? And of course they didn't. One thing that I've noticed about college basketball is a mid-major will never win a national title, at least while I'm around. It just seems like they can never do it. They get to the finals at best. Like Butler did it back-to-back seasons. San Diego State did. But as soon as they meet a Power 5 team, they get beat.
Well, I'll tell you what. Friday, I will set up a league, ESPN Tournament Madness, and I'll go ahead and I'll announce how you can get a hold of it and how you can become a part of it. And we'll let the winner get a little bit of something from us here at the Lakers Fast Break. So we'll go ahead and do something special for that. But my friend, before that happens, obviously, we've got a game on Wednesday. Very important that the Lakers go ahead and win against Sacramento. Otherwise, you could pretty much kiss any chance of passing them up in the standings goodbye. Your thoughts before we head on out?
For Sacramento?
If they lose to Sacramento, the tiebreaker is Sacramento's. So I would pretty much say that you could not – the Lakers would not be able to pass them up in the Western Conference standings before the end of the season.
I think every loss that Lakers take just continues to solidify them in the 9 and 10 spots. Whether it's Sacramento or whether it's Washington later or Toronto, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're in a very, very bad spot in terms of getting a lock on a playoff spot at the moment.
Kurt, it's going pretty good. I will, you know what, I'll tell you what, I've had an issue with my laptop here because the internet not working well for my laptop. I got the picture. I will post it on Facebook. I've been trying to post on YouTube, but for some reason I can't on my phone. So I will post it on Facebook and Twitter, and there'll be proof that Joe and I have met and in person. Yes, we're not AI. We're actually physical people that have met each other in person. See, there he is. There it is. He's got it on his phone right there, everyone. Yes, there is actual proof that Joe and I, yes, and we were ready to beat each other up, just like you guys ask for all the time. So it was right there, yes. Saw him yesterday in Temecula. Absolutely, it was a great time.
I don't think anybody's ever seen the full...
You and I, yes.
Yeah, the full. You guys have seen chest above, and then once in a while you've seen my crotch when I've gotten up and did a... Darvin Ham impression.
Darvin Ham, yes.
But that's what
it looks like. I knew, Joe, I knew somebody would go Kate Middleton on me. It looks like somebody already called Kate Middleton on us and said we doctored that photo.
I've never been called John Cena before.
That's funny. Well, oh, my gosh.
It's an interesting life. It's an interesting life. Being big, because you gain weight when you get older, typically. You're not as flexible. You enjoy food more when you get older, by the way. I don't think people talk about that more. I never used to eat like I do now. Maybe it's because I have the funds to eat whatever I want, right? Your palate changes because you start going to... I didn't go to steakhouses in my 20s. It wasn't something I thought about. My steakhouse was still Red Lobster in my 20s. Then you get into your 30s, you get married, you start making some money, you start doing this, you start doing that. All of a sudden, you start eating these lobsters and these crabs and ribeye. I didn't know what the hell a ribeye was when I was 25. They all looked the same to me. So you get to a point where you're like, damn, man, I can't drop down to my game time weight. No, man, you're not dropping because you're eating like a horse. But you don't want to stop either. So you try to combat it by just work out. I've always said to anybody, I go, look, if you really love to eat food, just keep working out every day. So that's what I've done. Hell, as of right now, today, this was my 25th straight day where I've worked out. It's just, well, Joe, you need to rest. I'm like, well, no, I don't, because if I rest, then I'm gonna balloon into something more round.
Yeah. By the way, he is an inch taller than me. It's legit. I'm 6'2". He is legit 6'3". He's legit 6'3". So yeah, you can't call me the white Wemby. He is taller than I am.
AJ Hawk said something a while back, former Packers middle linebacker, former Ohio State great. He said, I never lied about my height. He goes, I never wanted to be called out on my height being wrong. So, because then you get into that moment where you have a picture of The Rock next to Charles Barkley and Shaq, and then you're going, Charles Barkley with shoes is about 6'6". Why does he look 5 inches taller than The Rock? Shaq, makes sense, but so now, are you going to get called out for your fake height info? Just tell the truth. Just tell the truth. I took my daughter out and her friends to Vegas and a nice steakhouse. I told them, just order what I'm ordering. The ribeye, of course. Did you go to Mastro's, Karen? I had the greatest steak at Mastro's in Vegas. Still to this day.
Circus has a good one. There's a couple.
I don't like coffee, Alan.
There's some good places in Vegas. Vegas is done.
Here's the thing, guys. I work for a living. The goal at some point here is to be able to run business without having to do the business day in and day out, to allocate it to smart people and give myself more time. There's going to be a time here where it's strictly going to be the gym all day, every day, the nutritionists, the tests, all that. That day's coming. There will be a time when I'm not going to be as big as I am now, because when you start getting into your 50s, which I'm 4 years away, your body's going to start yelling at you. Right now, luckily, it's not yelling at me, but it's going to start yelling at me. I'm going to need to drop down probably about 50 pounds.
805, I've tried Instagram on both Courtside Lakers, which Henry has allowed me to go ahead and utilize, and also my own at Lakers Fast Break. It's not the easiest thing to do, but yeah, give me an email when you can, and we'll talk more about it, 805, because I like that idea. If you, somebody else can do it, because you need to do an extra step, or at least when I do it, when I post to Instagram live, I need to do something else. I need it, and I'm like, I'm doing 15 other different things. It is just, it's not instantaneous like doing it to Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and all these other ones. You just, you know, you click on it and that's where you'll end up. Instagram always takes other things. So yeah, if you want to go ahead and you know, inquire about that, let me know, my friend. LakersFastBreak@yahoo.com. We'd love to hear from you, 805. But Joe, it's been great having you on, my friend, as always. I don't know if we're going to do a show tomorrow. We'll see. Something comes up as far as Lakers that we'll definitely give it a shot. But my friend, otherwise, I will see you on Wednesday. By the way, John has asked to do something Wednesday afternoon as well. So keep an eye out for that. I'll set something up there as well.
Yes, I have an Instagram page. It's sinblades_turf.
And 805, yes, we do. I have two for the Lakers. At Lakers Fast Break on Instagram and at Courtside Lakers dash. But yeah, it's at Courtside Lakers. And also as well, at Lakers Fast Break. I have two different pages. One, the Courtside Lakers has a lot more followers. But again, yeah, it's just, it always asks you to do take one extra step. And it's just really hard to do that while you're running all these other pages and having it go to all these other places. But yeah, 805, hit me up when you get a chance. LakersFastBreak@yahoo.com. We'll talk more about it. Plus, on Friday, I'll set something up for a tourney challenge for this weekend, starting this weekend, so you can join it, and we'll think of a good prize to go ahead and get the winner. But yeah, man, again, very important game on Wednesday, so if we don't see you till then, really important game, Joe. I mean, I seem to think it's more important than you do, or am I wrong on that?
I think it's important that AD doesn't get punked by Sabonis again.
Good question, Darren. I haven't, but I will go ahead and I'm writing that down now. So I will go ahead and I'm typing that in now, and I'll go ahead and I'll give it a try before I leave.
If you go there tomorrow, let me know. I will be in San Diego tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, because we're going to be in and out. We're going to be around San Diego.
Knocking each other out with pizza.
Okay. I'll see if the kids and the family wants to do it. Yeah, but we'll be in and around La Jolla and San Diego tomorrow as well. So,
excellent.
You got it, my friend. Great to have you here. Everyone out there, thanks so much for joining us. You mean so much to us because it's just so great to kind of have this kind of support. That's why I'm doing this on the road. That's why we're doing this as many days as we can, because we appreciate you. As long as you keep appreciating us, we will go ahead and make sure we continue to go ahead and bring the best to you each and every time out, every which way we can, right here at the Lakers Fast Break Podcast. We'll see you if we don't see you tomorrow, we'll definitely see you on Wednesday. Good luck. We'll see you soon, and all the best. Stay safe, everyone.